So thanks for being here. My name is Eric Russell. I'm coming from Washington State University, so different side of the country. Time changes a little bit in a couple of days. Do need to acknowledge kind of co-authors, particularly Sarah Waldo and then Gia Riedenauer. Gia was a summer research intern, undergrad intern for us last summer, kind of worked with us on some of the modeling aspect of this. So N2O being one of being one of the more prevalent greenhouse gases, it's somewhere around 300 times the global warming potential of CO2, and between 298 310 is the numbers I've seen this week. And its background is up from about 270 ppb to around 320 ppb over the last kind of century or so, industrial times. A lot of that coming from kind of agricultural work, agricultural management, soil emissions, and so forth. As far as measurement goes, we're kind of shrinking this down to more of a field scale, point scale. And they're often done either some sort of soil chamber or micromet techniques. But like everything else, some have better and worse and advantages, disadvantages. Chamber measurements are hugely variable across a field, between chambers themselves, in time, hot spots, hot moments, kind of makes it a bit more difficult to get a representation out of that. Micromet-based measurements, the covariance, flux gradient types of measurements, have their own logistical challenges. They're fairly expensive. They take a lot of power to it, and then there's a lot of processing that goes into kind of getting from measurement back to some sort of field emission itself. And then same with the idea of their own uncertainties associated with it. So question became, how do we get kind of from field scale emissions of fluxes of non-CO2 gases to more point measurements? We do CO2 extremely well as far as kind of measurements go at the field scale. Methane's getting better, but N2O is still kind of a problem in that respect because there's still a little bit of the measurement aspects to it. So can we estimate N2O field scale emissions just from mean concentration and meteorological measurements, just as a simple atmospheric transport model, so coming more top-down than kind of bottom-up as opposed to, like, say, EPIC or something along those lines. So using kind of chamber measurements, kind of tower measurements, can we get using this model called WindTrax to estimate N2O emissions at a field scale up from a point scale, and then from there, if we get multiple fields, we can get even further up. So the data is coming out of the Cook Agronomy Farm out in southeastern Washington, kind of this black little dot here, and kind of a few miles north of where WSU actually sits. Both sites were in spring canola that year, planted kind of within about a couple weeks of each other. Grabbed a lot of met eddy covariance turbulence data off of kind of the tower part itself. We ended up with four groups of four chambers per site, so ended up with 16 total chambers per site, with so 32 chambers between two sites. They're all kind of automated chambers, and they were out there continuously. So, but to get through and cycle through all of this, it's over a four-hour measurement cycle. It takes 3 hours to cycle through the chambers, and then we needed an hour for the tower system itself to get everything through the lines flushed and measured as we want it to be measured. As far as wind direction goes, this is where things start, kind of as far as some of the results go. Our winds were fairly consistent daytime to nighttime for these couple months, daytime coming more from the west-northwest and nighttime coming east-southeast. But that's helpful, at least at the NT site, because that's parallel to how the chambers were aligned. And so each of those bubbles represents a group of four chambers, and so the tower was always upwind or downwind, depending on how you want to look at it, of kind of an actual emissions measurement point. But the little downside is that circle is about a 20-meter radius, so the chambers are within about 10 meters of the tower. A flux footprint in the field scale is 300 meters radius. So this is where this representation problem starts kind of coming back to bite us a little bit. At the CT site, a little different. The chambers were perpendicular to our wind direction. So daytime crossed over the chambers before they got to the towers. Again, kind of this proximity and representation comes back. But at nighttime, there is no chamber upwind of the site. We don't have kind of anything particularly upwind relative to the tower. So as far as the actual what it looks like over in time, this is just kind of the atmospheric concentration, the chamber, or the mean chamber emissions across those 16 chambers. So the blue line is the atmospheric concentration, the red line is the chambers. It rained about here, which is where this is coming from as well. And scales are a bit different. CTO is a much more higher emissions. But there wasn't really much of a trend over time, and the NT is more spiky, is kind of episodic, as N2 emissions tend to be. CT had a bit more of a trend to it, still kind of sorting out exactly where and why. And same with the concentrations, a bit of a trend in the concentrations that we didn't see at the NT site. And so we want to see if we can get back to these emissions and kind of what field scale would possibly have to get to. And so WindTrax is kind of a more of a desktop model, almost a little bit simpler than some of the other things that have been talked about here, just to simulate atmospheric trace gases as far as if we're given a source and given a set of meteorological measurements, how do we get back to some sort of estimate of our emissions within a source area? But it's not without its drawbacks, like every model ever existing. It treats everything as a flat field. Anyone who's familiar with eastern Washington geography, it's very, very hilly. We can have 10%, 15% slopes in the same field. There's nothing chemistry. N2O is just acting as a tracer, and it's purely atmospheric. It's all kind of top-down, nothing from the soil aspect of it. It comes the question of what emissions do we need to reach the concentration values that we had. And time independent. So even though we have basically 2 months of measurements, it's not caring too much about what happened previous unless we do that on our own and invoke it on ourselves. So it's what's known as a backwards Lagrangian stochastic model. So it releases a lot of particles from a single point. We give it inputs of wind direction, wind speed, turbulence, stability, surface roughness, kind of a source area, and it tracks particles back to kind of the source area of the source area. And occasionally they land outside the source area, which means they're too far, they're either farther away or kind of in an area we say there shouldn't be N2O coming from here. And then N2O coming out of there. So that gives us an estimate of an emissions rate given that set of inputs. Just a weird angle. So this is what that ends up looking like, at least at the NT site. So the top and bottom, it's the same data, it's just color-coded a little differently. The gray shading in the background is the range between the minimum to the maximum chamber emissions during that kind of 4-hour measurement period. There's almost always one chamber that came out near zero. And there's one that was kind of, you can see kind of just the general range and the level of variability that comes out of it. So the top plot shows kind of the alignment with and without the chambers as far as wind direction. If you remember back to some of those site pictures earlier, the X's being kind of those that are aligned with the chambers and kind of a relatively narrower a vector there. But there's not a whole lot of ordering to it. Nothing kind of pops out from this. We are just generally overestimating, kind of especially in this middle part here when the emissions are relatively low. And then on the bottom one, we're using stability as a kind of a proxy for turbulence and footprint size, so how kind of from there. And there is a little bit, the stable periods tend to be a little bit lower, tend to be a little bit closer, you get a little bit different footprint size from that compared to the stabler, and then the few neutral points we have. From the CT side of things, there was that kind of trend in the concentration values, trend in the emissions values, and we see a little bit of that showing up in the modeled emissions, the WindTrax modeled emissions here. We get a little bit different approach as far as the wind direction kind of alignment with the chambers as far as the model alignment and the data alignment here. But still nothing that kind of pops out at us. So just because the chambers were upwind or downwind doesn't necessarily give us a better estimate of the emissions themselves, because they're only a couple chambers and they're very kind of point measurements. Whereas stability orders itself a little bit better, so the stable periods pretty much fall within this range for the most part, especially in through here, and then we get this kind of decrease in the modeled emissions there. Where unstable tends to be overestimating the actual the kind of measured emissions that come out, which probably has to do with the size of the footprint that it falls over, is the source area that it falls over. So the distance versus kind of the amount of turbulence we have, so the mixing we get, and the area kind of in which the tower is sourcing emissions from. But even though we're overestimating things, looking at kind of the absolute that whether or not we're capturing the right magnitude, which we are as far as the maximum chamber emissions, which are those green dots on each one, at least to a point, and then some of the highest emissions, we kind of were a little bit off. And NT itself, same with that too. But the mean emissions kind of through those chambers, we're well overestimating it, kind of at peak points, kind of closer order of magnitude up to 2 or 3 times difference for both sites. There is a bit of a scale difference between the two. Box plot showing roughly the same thing as well, as far as the range of the average chamber generally being lower than what we're getting out of kind of wind tracks and the max chambers for both sites. So, not too surprising, chambers may not represent an entire field scale emission, but you know, there's large variability among and across the different chamber groups, hot spots, hot moments that come from that. And this is from an atmospheric perspective. I should have prefaced this. I'm more of a micrometeorologist than a soil scientist, so I kind of think top down from bottom up side. But there's, you know, models uncertainty itself as well. Kind of wind tracks only considers emissions. There's no other transporter, sink or source or loss terms in it. It doesn't matter if it rained the day before or not. The temporal trends kind of didn't agree so well with the emissions trends. They agreed a bit better with the concentration trends, because that's kind of where it's kind of working as far as some of its limitations go. But the magnitude of the mild emissions, we overestimated mean emissions. We kind of agree with what the magnitude of the maximum emissions go. So we're at kind of an upper range estimate, if you will. So we captured, you know, we're within an order of magnitude, which is pretty good, and from this kind of simple exercise, if you will. And we could probably use this to help fill in some of the gaps and some of the missing parts, uses an upper estimates of field scale emissions, that we've kind of sort out a way to work in kind of say a storage term or a loss term in there, then it probably bring those emissions down a bit. We have other results to work through to compare back to field scale, see how well this is actually working. Some of this sort of work is done too with different types of micromet techniques to get back to emissions from kind of measurements itself kind of at this field scale. So do need to thank funding, USDA and NEPA for REACH, and then kind of funded summer undergrads working with us. And so with that, thank you, and I'll take any questions.
We have time for a few questions. How robust, and I know this is still pretty exploratory, but how robust do you think it would be moving to different locations? Is it,
well, it's more of kind of specific to those sites. If we have the measurements at those sites,
yeah,
then we could do some similar sort of kind of exercise, if you will. But just upping and moving the model without the measurements, it, you know, it's not a kind of standalone.
Right.
It's more of a tool to get back to emissions at a field scale from kind of point measurements or kind of single measurement aspects.
So this is kind of a proof of concept to see if it works. So if those two locations, it may be able to port over to others with additional data.
Yeah, if you can move the whole system over, which is itself its own challenge. I've seen it used the same sort of idea used in a couple talks here of kind of open path or line measurements of N2O on the kind of edges of fields, and then getting back to an emissions value, having kind of a line emission instead of weather data, and not really a, you know, one chamber in the middle of the field.
Okay.
So.
Great. Any other questions, comments? Great. Thank you.
Thank you.